Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling.
Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer. I was just looking at a donkey and got distracted. We'll tell you about that in a few minutes. Our guest today is an all-around gambler named Jacob. We'll be talking to Jake in a few minutes. In the news, somewhat related to gambling, the Las Vegas Review-Journal, the largest newspaper in Nevada, is now owned by casino owner Sheldon Adelson. Adelson is adamantly opposed to online gaming, and in 2012 backed Republican candidates to the tune of more than $100 million. This is not a political show, and we don't really discuss politics except where it relates to gambling issues. Gambling-wise, is this a big deal, Richard?
First I would say it's good to be the king, if you can just afford to buy newspapers like that.
$140 million? Yeah, just pocket change.
Yeah, and, you know, how it'll affect us as gamblers? I mean, you know, he is the biggest anti-online gambling lobbyist, you know, there is, so... if he's got a newspaper behind him helping him, I don't think that'll bode well for online gambling. How much effect it'll have, I mean, who knows until we, you know, we'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah, some newspapers are able to keep the front page and the editorial page separate, and some aren't.
Right.
All right. A question from a listener sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. This guy is an Uber driver, drives a taxi. One of his passengers offered him $75 to sign up for a player's card at a casino, where the passenger would play on that card and thereafter collect the accumulated free play. The listener wanted to know if this was an identity theft scam. My response is probably it's the casino being scammed, not the Uber driver.
Well, I would object to the word scam, but I have to say this: it just seems like really a bad idea. I mean, I understand people are trying to get more IDs to you know to play, but soliciting an Uber driver actually this.
Do you like yellow cab drivers better?
I don't see good things coming of that strategy. Soliciting complete strangers like that. And it brings to mind a story, actually. I knew a guy who, now this is 35 years ago. But
it's okay. I like your stories anyway. Go ahead.
This guy's technique would be to, he went to the bar at a casino in Laughlin, and he would cut into somebody at the bar and say, look, I found this dealer and I can see their whole card. And I'll go signal you, and you bet the money, you know.
Total strangers
at the bar. This is what he would do.
Oh.
Rather than just go bet it himself. I don't know if he was trying to finagle some kind of deal where he had none of the losses and half of the wins or what. But anyway, it was all going along fine until one day he cut into a guy at a bar at a casino down in Laughlin, and the guy turned out to be a Griffin agent. So, yeah. So
could have been the owner of the casino.
It could have been anybody. But
oh my God! So. All right, now I'll move on. another listener email, gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, is from a blackjack player who was shortchanged about 10 times in one casino in 1 hour, different dealers, and even at the cage. Each time he pointed it out, and it was corrected immediately. He wants to know if this is likely just a fluke or whether the casino was systematically trying to rip off its customers.
Well, I think if it was in the United States, I think it was just a fluke. There was a casino.
10 times in an hour?
Well, maybe they're just grossly incompetent. There was a casino in Czechoslovakia that was their cheating technique. They would, you know, intentionally try to mispay you, and if you're not paying close attention, you know, you can lose really quickly that way. So, but I can't see a casino in the United States trying to cheat in that manner, you know. But if the guy said, yeah, it was a casino in Czechoslovakia, I'd be like, yeah, I don't think that was an accident. So.
Okay. In the news, a very large casino in central Phoenix, Arizona, opened up a few days ago without a gaming license. Apparently, the tribe felt that state approval wasn't really necessary. State of Arizona said, oh, yes, it is. What do you know about this, Richard?
Well, you know, mainly, you know, a lot of people track when new casinos are going to open because they want to head there right away when they do. So you probably don't want to go heading there if you're a table games player because they don't have any right now. But I did see an article that the place is full of slot machines. So I don't know if you can actually play those slot machines or they're just there waiting to be turned on. So in any event, unless you live in Phoenix, I wouldn't bother going to the casino yet.
It could have been Class 2 slot machines rather than Class 3. It's a difference, a distinction with respect to the Johnson Act and Indian gaming. So I don't know what that would be. My guess is this is going to be resolved with a payment of a large amount of money.
Yeah.
You don't build a... I don't know how big the casino was, whether it's 100 million or a billion or whatever it is, but it's supposed to be really big. And so there's room.
Well, and they have a really great location. I mean, it's the only casino on the west side of Phoenix. So,
you know, and the voters of Phoenix says no more casinos, so... Who knows how that's going to be resolved, but I'm guessing it's going to involve money.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to our guest. Jacob is a gambler who specializes in a wide variety of games, including blackjack, machines, sports betting, and cashing coupons. Jacob, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, often we hear a phrase such as the Vegas odds maker. Make the Patriots a 6-point favorite on a game. Do you have a problem with such a phrase?
It's grossly inaccurate. I don't know if it's
You think it should be 7?
No, I don't really think I'm smarter than the odds makers to begin with. No, it's ridiculous because, well, just for people that don't understand how like a sports betting line is made, I think there's the perception is that there's all these old school odds makers. They're crunching the numbers, so to speak, and it's basically an outfit in Costa Rica. They make a number, very low limit attached. It's sort of a guess, educated guess. You know, I mean, they're close. But the numbers that you see that people are betting into are shaped by the collective wisdom of everybody, the betting market. So the guys in Costa Rica make the 6 or 7 or whatever. And if it's 5 on game day, it's not like MGM's odds maker puts it at 5 because he feels that will get split action. It's because the bettors have bet it from 6 to 5 or from 6 to 7. That's why the numbers move, and that's how they're created. Then just the notion, if a game lands close to the number or somebody or the books win over the course of the season, you'll hear squares, you know, have some variation of Vegas knew, or, you know, you can't beat Vegas. Vegas, no, that's not how it works. And Vegas itself as an entity in the sports betting world is nothing. There are no odds makers in town. I think...
There's no odd makers? The odds makers?
Well, to be fair, I think Westgate opened the NBA like regular season win totals, division props. I think, of all places, Atlantis Reno actually opens them for baseball. So the win will put up college football on Sunday before anybody else for small limits. And, of course, so when the win – it's a publicity stunt. The win puts up their college football things at 3. And I think Chris, the major offshore, opens at like 4. If they're a point different, win will immediately move to copy the offshore number because it's just sharper. And that's what... And
I had a friend who worked for William Hill here in town.
Yeah.
And he said they did absolutely nothing until Pinnacle or Chris. If Pinnacle or Chris moved a number, they immediately put up whatever Pinnacle or Chris had.
Right. So they'll copy it. And then from there, like, they can, okay, they'll copy it. And then they'll get, if they get big action on the underdog, then they can move it down or up from there. But as far as what they, their base starting point, they're all copying the same numbers. There's no odds making going on. You know, the MGM guy isn't going to think the Patriots game is 6 and Caesars thinks it's 5 and William Hill thinks it's 7. And those are the numbers they all put up. Like, no, they're just going to copy the 6 and that's where they all start with.
Yeah.
But sometimes you do see them differ by a half point or a point.
Yeah. Generally, either because they took action on a side or they can have an opinion. Westgate or Cantor or one of the major players, they can have opinions on a game. But you don't need to go. So if the market is 6 on the theoretical Patriots game, if they have an opinion that the Patriots are going to win, and so they want dog money, they don't need to put up 8 or 9, even if they think that's a good number. All you have to do is go higher than the market. So if they go 6.5, anybody who wants to bet that dog will go to their book. It's just a better – you're not going to play plus 6 instead of 6.5. So you only have to go about a half point higher than everybody else to get that bet.
And even then, sometimes they'll just keep it at 6, but they'll make it minus 108 instead of minus 110 or something like that.
And the whole notion that, oh, the bookies want to split the money, it's not really true. They're willing to gamble. They're taking plus 110 on both sides. You don't need a 50-50 decision on every single gate.
Now, most sports bettors are handicappers, sort of. And you apparently are a sports bettor who is not a handicapper. How does that work? Or is my premise all wrong?
Well, let's define. Okay, so for the notion of an AP sports bettor, there's like two ways that somebody would beat sports. The first one, I guess the sexy one, would be handicapping. You have your own quantitative methods, anything. You're making your own number. You think your numbers are better than the market or the odds makers, and you bet accordingly. At minus 110, you have to 52.5% to break even. So you think that you're going to win 53% or more. It's extremely difficult. There are very few pure handicappers out there. In the same bucket, I would account something like, you could have something like an angle. I have no idea if this is valid, so please nobody go out and bet on this. But, for instance, college basketball tournament, March Madness, they play most of the latter rounds in football stadiums. So throughout the season, you have teams that are playing in these various small arenas. Like, you know, even Duke's arena is not very large. So even when they're – so you have various sizes, and then it's like a depth perception issue. You're shooting into a cavernous football stadium. And so your theory would be the games are going to be lower scoring because it's just a different environment. So if you had that hypothesis, you would get previous data, you know, what are the totals in games played in football stadiums, and are they lower scoring? And you may find out that you could blindly have 55% bets. Or maybe another like well-known one, Monday Night Football, home dogs. Like all throughout the 90s and early 2000s before the information was so prevalent. You could blindly bet any primetime NFL dog because the squares would drive the number up because they're always been the favorites. And you definitely have profitable bets if you were just blindly betting that. It doesn't work anymore. But I would consider anything that's like that probably handicapping as well. So that's one way that you would win. It's difficult and unusual, and you would never give that away. You wouldn't tell somebody how to do it. But the other way would be like the math way, kind of like the card counting of sports betting. I guess the most well-known one would be the Wong teasers, NFL teasing through the 3 and 7, either up or down. And like parlay cards, but even just gaining a number. So if that market number was a 5 on an NBA game and you for some reason have access to a plus 6, you are gaining a point for the price of laying $1.10, if we just assume that plus 5 is fair. And so you're gaining more in value than what you're paying. That would be anything with those math ways to beat sports. And I guess that's how most people do it. chasing stale numbers or betting parlay cards or teasers or any other just strictly math-based thing where you can run the numbers and simulation and see you have an edge. There's no handicapping skill involved whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So how do you go about finding the stale numbers? I mean, do you have to sit in front of your screens all day long? And so, for example, here in Vegas, you can be at home and you can look at what every place has.
Yeah.
But by the time you get in your car and drive there, I mean, how do you do that?
I'm not really a stale number chaser. Some books are just more known for that than others. A station property is slower to move than Cantor or Westgate. Like, they're always going to be pretty well pegged to Chris and Pinnacle, whereas those guys aren't. I think more common is somebody with, like, a street bookie or whatever that will just basically, I mean, they all open at the same number. So it'll open 6, but the market will move it to 5. Some heavy hitter or big money will be on that side. And then you'll just have the number that sits at 6. It's not, nobody just opens at 5 and moves it to 6 off that number. That's just not going to happen. But you'll see the stale number that didn't move when everybody else moved. The main problem is you'll get heat on those bets. Like, they just don't like to take bets on stale numbers. They know that you have a mathematical edge on this. And if you do it all the time, you'll get branded as a steam chaser. And that's not really a place you want to be.
If they know it's stale, why don't they do something about it?
They're incompetent.
I mean, so is it possible that they don't know it's stale?
Well, in Las Vegas, when you place a quote-unquote large wager, that's going to vary by sport and book. It flags your approval. If you want to bet $20 on the stale number, fine. But if you want to bet $1,000 on it, it goes for approval, and some guy in the back room, well, before they approve their bet, they will look at what they have on their screen. Jake wants to bet +5, and they'll see that Pinnacle has 4, and they just reject your bet. They won't take it. And, that's kind of the way they get around it. They might take it for small stakes, but once they know that's what you do, then...
Well, the other thing that happens is...
They'll take the bet on the other side.
Well, yeah, yes.
Another reason juice up the favorite an extra point, and when they have all the squares coming in laying -5 when the market's 4, fine. But as soon as somebody tries to take 5, they just reject the bet.
Yeah. The other thing that happens is if you consistently end up on the right side of a number, even if it wasn't stale, right? Let's say that the line opens at 7 and by the time the game goes off, it's down to 6. But you're consistently getting 7 when they're ending up at 6, or you're always on that right side of the number. That'll get you barred too.
It's no different from tables or slots or anything. If they see you coming in often and making reasonable size wagers, they will push the player's card on you and track your bets. So they will know if you're winning, if you're beating the number. I mean, that is all available to them.
So you more focus on looking for angles where you get a hypothesis and then you test it and you go after that method of trying to beat it.
Yeah, I have what I think the numbers should be and what they have, and if I feel like there's an overlay, I'd make that bet. I don't bet parlay cards. I don't bet teasers. The math stuff, like any advantage play, it's because the casinos know that stuff. And it becomes widely known, and it's just harder to get that action down. You don't have as much problem just straight betting into big markets.
How is it in sports betting, a sports betting AP, how is that different than an AP blackjack player or an AP video poker player or something like that?
Well, I guess in the same vein of what I just said, if you are a profitable handicapper, if you can just go up to the board, if you can bet into Pinnacle or Chris and win, you will make a lot of money. You just can't not do it. This is different from, the difference is the hard part is getting the edge, and the easy part is making big money if you have that edge. For like card counting, I'm confident I can teach anybody of average intelligence to count cards. It's not hard to play blackjack with an edge. But it's really hard to make a lot of money at it because casinos aren't just going to sit there and let you bomb away purple chips. If you want to bet some reds or you're playing a really stupid casino, you can get in some play. It's just Counting's easy to play with an edge. I mean, even hole carding, it's, I know they think that they're the kings of the AP jungle. You know, I saw the dealer's hole card and played accordingly. It's, if you can see the hole card, you're going to beat the game. It's not that hard. But you're not going to win big, because when you're standing on four, when you're splitting a pair of sixes against the dealer's face card, you know, I mean, for $1,000 bets, you're either really stupid or really smart. They should be able to figure this out. So that's the difference, is just most forms of AP getting the edge, even to some extent video poker. You know, if you buy the Bob Dancer software, get adept at the game, you know what it pays, you know what the slot club returns or the meter runs, you know whether or not you're playing with an edge, but you're not winning huge sums of money. Handicapping at sports, you're not getting an edge. Just, you're not going to win 53% unless you're really good with statistics and modeling and computer programming and everything else that goes involved in it. But if you somehow get that edge, you're going to win a lot of money. Just think of it like a graph. You know, the easier the play is to identify by the casino, the less money you're going to win and go the other direction.
Yeah, so, well, the market is so much bigger. You know,
it doesn't have the hallmarks. You just walk up. The only thing, they track your play. They see, you know, if you're just walking in, what's the difference between a table games pit square who bets $5,000 on his favorite college football team and a guy who's, let's just for the sake, he knows he's going to win 55% of his college football plays. There's no difference between the two. It's just the one person is coming in all the time, betting big and winning. That's the only way you're ever going to know. It's not like card counting where you bet small, bet big.
Right.
Yeah. Anybody who can count down the shoe will realize what you're doing. But there's, he laid -110 into our number, which was the same as Pinnacle. There's no hallmark to that being an advantage play.
So what you're saying is a successful sports betting AP can win a lot more money than most other APs. Is that a conclusion you said, sort of?
Yes, but it's, you can't just pick up a book. You can go, you could probably beat the dealer, but, you know, even more contemporary works, I mean, anything by Wong or Schlesinger or, you know, anything like that. There are plenty of good material out there that will allow you to play a game like blackjack, counting cards with an edge. And that's not the case in sports, because nobody who's developed that skill is ever going to give it away, because it would be insane.
Well, there is at least one. There's the book about baseball.
I know what you're talking about. I haven't read it, and I don't really, I'm not involved in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is, as you say, there really aren't good books about how to beat sports betting. So,
if I've developed a model that wins 55% of the time, there would never be an incentive for me to tell. Basically, I mean, the only way you're going to do that is what you're valuing in your work is different from what everybody else values. If you were a baseball handicapper in 1990 and they're making numbers based on batting average and ERA, and you know the tools that analytics, you know, you've read Moneyball and you're going back in time, and your numbers are just going to be better than theirs because you're weighting things much more efficiently than they are. Similar concept, you know, you're just making better number. There's no reason you'd ever tell somebody, oh, the key to beating NFL is, you know, penalty yards or, you know, whatever yeah. It is, you know, like nobody's weighting that. And you're like, no, that's the real key.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of sports radio shows, and you'll hear ads from various touts, all of whom claim to be killing the books, and every week they offer their pick of the year selection for free. And if it doesn't work, we'll give you the Super Bowl champion for free. Now, what percentage of these touts know their butt from a burrito?
I'd say zero, but I know there have been a couple of reputable touts in the past, so let's go like less than 1%. I think the real, like, okay, let's just dismiss out of hand anybody who's, I hit 70% winners or whatever. the touting game has evolved. I know when I was a kid, you had the Saturday morning tout shows with, you know, Jim Feist and his crew live from the Vegas Strip, and they'd yell at you and have little graphics in the background, 80% winners. And that doesn't really cut it anymore. People kind of know that that's not true. The common tout tactic now is where they, you basically just release different buckets with your plays, like, you know, four different groups, one weights, two weights, three weights, games of the week, games of the month. And if you're, and if somebody's listening wondering how can you have multiple games of the month, oh, they do. Just the other day on Twitter, I saw somebody tweeted out, like, some tout had his ESPN2 game of the month. Like, wait, this guy releases a game of the month for different channels? I mean, they find ways to just have, you know, every sport, every channel, every, you know, just all these different games. But, you know, so if they have four buckets of plays, they go 2-4, 2-4, 2-4, 8-2, they flipped a coin. They just went 500. But now they will advertise 8-2 run on my bulldozer plays or whatever they call them while ignoring the other three. And then they'll, you know, they'll try to tout, I'm on this big run on my bulldozers, you got to get on it. And they'll make their sales there and ignore the other ones. But and then as the bulldozer plays regress towards 50%, well, now all of a sudden the sledgehammer plays won three in a row. Three straight winners on my sledgehammer is going to – so they can be 50%, but they just – you just talk about which group is the best. And when you call them out on this, you're advertising short-term streaks. The I guess the most common refrain that they'll use is, well, and it's actually true. I believe that the premise is true. Well, I hit 55%, but my business would be dead if I advertised that rate. And I mean, like your typical Square looking for a winner this weekend isn't going to be impressed by 55%. An advantage player, a true pro, is like, whoa, 55%.
Yeah, right.
Is great.
I was going
to
say.
But
yeah,
the guy looking to bet his, you know, his rent money this weekend on the big game that's on ESPN is, you know, he wants the winner. He wants 80%. He's not impressed by 55. So yeah, 55% would kill my business, which is of course another lie. But that's kind of how they. Well, yeah, of course the short term I have to advertise that. So yeah, touts 55%. That doesn't happen, partly because, like I said, if you could handicap that rate, you'd have no incentive to sell. You'd just get rich anyway.
Yeah.
So all these touts are a dime or a dozen. I think the most interesting studies and the ones that kind of prove why touting doesn't really make sense are the successful ones. The two probably most well-known winning touts. One was this guy, Dr. Bob. He's a straight, pure handicapper. He still exists. He's still around. I don't think he has an edge. He's just a pure handicapper. And if you were betting his picks in 2000 or 2005 or whatever, I mean, you... He had an edge, clearly. He was just better than anyone else. His problem was he would have these detailed write-ups and actually include, like, which stats. And I think his big thing was yards per play, and that's kind of, like, how his handicapping was better. So he would have these detailed write-ups, and anytime you're winning and releasing that information – there are other people in this world. There's 7 billion people on the planet. If you think that nobody's going to try to grab this money that's available, you're crazy. So his picks basically, well, one, if you are a successful tout, you're going to get too popular. You can't, maybe if you were an early adopter to Dr. Bob and he releases plus 14 on a football game, you could go out and leisurely bet at all the places for a substantial amount. You'd probably win great. But once he has 10 or 20 or 50 big betting clients, it just doesn't work. He releases 14 and you have, I don't know, 5 seconds to get in that bet. And otherwise, well, I'm going to bet plus 13. It's almost the same. And so at first, it's just a move so fast. And I remember in 2007, no, he releases at the same time every week too. Okay, at 2 o'clock on Thursday, Dr. Bob comes out. I went to the cannery and they had their college football was down. And I'm like, well, I want to bet on the Fresno State or whatever. The college football is down for maintenance. And magically, as soon as he's done releasing, the numbers go back up. I'm like, at that point, there's no value left, even with a guy, a handicapper. I shouldn't even, you know, not a tout, he's a handicapper. That's hitting 56%. You just don't have value. You can't get the bets down. Hmm. And his write-ups were so good that people reverse engineered it. So he's releasing on Thursday. Well, if I know that plus 14 is going to be a Dr. Bob pick, I just bet it on Tuesday. So he goes from releasing 56% plays on Thursday that you have hours to get down on. Well, now the number's been ironed out on Tuesday. He's releasing plus 13 or 12.5 because the other guys who reverse engineered him already bet it. And now you have 10 seconds to get down to 53% play. So, yeah, his edge is largely gone. Another interesting one was Right Angle Sports, which is actually a really great name. So they were big winners on small market like college basketball totals. And they almost destroyed that market to where the books wouldn't even put these up unless it was a television game or they were putting up an hour before tip off. So what he did, he actually was betting his picks, but front running his customers. And here's so touts, like, they want the credibility. Oh, I do bet my picks. You don't want to buy picks from somebody who won't even put their own money behind it. But it's one of the mini tout paradoxes. If you bet, you're either betting before I get the pick and losing the value, because you should move the number if you're a big winner and big bettor, or you are betting after me, which you're competing with me. So this Right Angle Sports Group, they actually were front-running their customers. They were betting plus, you know, they release, or they would go out and bet plus +7 on a game they handicapped. They're very good handicappers. And then it would move to 6.5 or 6 or whatever. And then he would release this to his clients. And once they found out that, you know, he has like, well, you're a valued client, of course. I'm glad you're a subscriber. But these are more valued clients that have the access to the picks 2 hours before you do and are just eroding all your value. And, I mean, I don't want to hugely get into it, but it turned out like one of his movers was a bank robber. And there was like a whole brouhaha about all that stuff.
All right. Interesting. Let's go on a different subject. Video poker.
No. And the jackass that had you flummoxed at the top of the show.
There was a jackass that had me flummoxed at the start of the show. Now, Bob Nersesian was on, and he talked about a plastic donkey. And it turns out that had something to do with you. And we actually have the plastic donkey in the studio.
I've taken pictures, and I'll put them on the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page.
Oh, good. That's certainly a reason to subscribe. Without going detail on the legal aspects, what was this all about, Jake?
So this is the play. It was a video blackjack. Not one of the big Shuffle Master ones, like a bar top, over 1,000 hands an hour type game. It was the most simple game ever. It was just a regular, you know, house edge is 3/10, and they're giving you back 2% in rebates and free play.
2%? Jesus.
Well, that was okay. That it was a flat. If you had their best players club card, which took one day of play to get, and they, before we were there, there were four of us total, three of us in the lawsuit. Before that even happened, they had like, I think, 6 or 7 top players, like 250K coin in a 3-month span, and they had 6 people. This casino is small and doesn't get any action, and we all got it in one day. And so if you were their top players club, you got 1% back on your coin in the next month. And it being video blackjack, you also got splits and doubles too, so you're getting like 1.13% back. And then there's a 20.25% just flat slot play, and then they had double and triple point days, so you're getting up to 2% back. It was totally crazy. Not going through everything of the lawsuit, because friend of the program, Bob Nersesian, was our lawyer, and I'm sure he can explain it better than I can. But as far as the actual play, after it came out that they knew, okay, so we're killing them, you know, winning pretty substantial money, and this is a low rollers casino. I mean, I don't even know if they're being profitable during this period of time. They found out that we were advantage players. Sounds like it was even Griffin, but, you know, who knows what actual one, but of all names to pop up in this era, like Griffin. They knew we were APs, and instead of doing the what any right-minded casino would do, they could be polite and just, you're out of the slot club, but you can play. It could have been rude in 86 to us, and, you know, here, get out and don't come back. They decided, the investigation was not run by anybody in the casino. This is a true story. The general manager of the casino, as I found out when I had dinner with him as a high roller, he was originally a construction worker. He helped build the casino. He's a member of the tribe. Now, he helped build the casino. And they, you know, they turfed out the previous management. And they're like, well, we need a new general manager. And he was taking night classes at the local community college and said, as he told the story, he goes, I go to the tribal council and said, why not give me a shot? And they went for it. Like, that's the top guy here. And who knows where everybody else comes from. So the investigation of us is run by the tribal police chief, who knows nothing about gaming. And these people are just clueless. And they couldn't believe that you could beat machines. So we have hundreds of hours. Bob has like hundreds of hours of us. They're just surveilling us, watching every move. How are they doing it? How are they doing it? They could have hired a consultant. I mean, Bob could have told them, if they said, we have these players beating us on the machines, your first response would be, what is your games? What is your slot club? You could have told them in 5 minutes, like, well, here's your problem. And they were spending months and months and just had no idea what was going on. And finally, I guess they just got angry. They felt betrayed or something. So they, you know, they hauled us into the back and brought in the phony or the corrupt cops. And, you know, that's how all the lawsuit stuff went down. But that was the game. Just a total straightforward. They're paying me $600 to lose $100.
You have to explain how the magic plastic donkey came
right.
into play.
So we didn't, I mean, not even like gray area.
It looks like a small pinata, folks. I mean, it's about 2 inches tall and it looks like a pinata.
This was just a total cut and dry what we were doing. And they bring in the state of gaming investigator and we talked to them and it was like, you could tell they knew they screwed up almost immediately. And I was pretty honest with the gaming investigator at that point. I'm like, I just play video blackjack. They offer this ridiculous cashback. I don't know. I mean, okay. So they kind of started retconning all these reasons that this was okay. There was, and you know, this was like totally an illegal search and everything else. So a couple of things I thought were hilarious that come out afterwards when they're, you know, coming up with their post facto justification. One was a search warrant, if you want to call it. I mean, I guess that's what it said on it. The tribal court magistrate or whoever he is, this happened on October 25th, and then this thing was dated like November 11th. Some tribal court magistrate issued a search warrant. Like, what is that even? Like, what is 3 weeks after the? Well, I guess while they're in their DeLorean going back in time with their search warrant to make everything okay. I don't even be like, what is this? It was the most ridiculous. And another one was, this is how little they knew about their own process. One of their objects of suspicion was they watched us typing 4-digit codes into the machine and credits would appear. As anybody knows, that's downloading free play with your PIN. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, credits appear. They were giving me $8,000 a week in free play.
$8,000 a week?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I might be able to win with that.
Yeah, you're getting $8,000 a week of free play. They're watching. It was very suspicious when this plaintiff was, or the suspect was, just entering codes, and they would. This is 2011. They all had phones. Like they would all come to the casino with phones, and I would often play with like a headset MP3 player. There's nothing more boring than 14-hour sessions of video blackjack. I mean, just Jesus.
Slot machines could be more boring.
At least you have the excitement of hitting a jackpot. The most I was going to win on a hand was $30 or $40 on a double down. Like, this was just mind-numbing. And yeah, everything became an object of suspicion, and including this guy here, the donkey. I really hope people look at the picture to see how absurd saying that this was a suspicion of cheating device really is.
It has two antennas on it.
Yeah. So they said, that I was bringing in, Jake's bringing in this donkey. And, I sat it on the machine. Anybody could look at it. I'm sure they had their zoom ins and stuff. There's nothing on this. And, I mean, this was in their documents that... So after the fact, they actually said one of the objects, they confiscated everything from us.
Including
the donkey. And that one of the devices, they said, he has a donkey with a potential cheating with a USB port. Do you see a... They had it. I'm assuming this is actually a second generation. I never got him back. I mean, they also stole $9,500 from me that I never got back, but I didn't get back my beloved donkey either. I'm assuming they sawed his head off and were like, look, putting him through a diagnostics check. But I mean, it just went to show the farce of this particular, stuff. They were just grasping at anything. He had a donkey. That's not normal.
That part is right.
Well, as it relates to being bored, the whole reason, like, why did he bring it? It was a good luck token. I'm not stupid. I don't believe the donkey influenced the outcome. It was more that it's just like a conversation start. You're sitting there, you just put it on the machine, and maybe, mainly inside joke with me and the other guys who were playing there. But, some poppies would see it and like, what's that? And like, oh, well, hey, random stranger. I guess it's been asking a random stranger to hold card for you in Laughlin. And like, oh, it's a plastic donkey. I don't know. And just said, when a lot of the play, we were playing at the bar. So, you know, like the bar waitresses would come around and, oh, hey, see, you got the donkey. And
it's a way to cruise for babes. I got it.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't going to be that straightforward with it. But, yeah, of course.
Did it work?
Well, I mean, this was Payson, Arizona. It's like not the most.
There are no babes in Payson, Arizona?
No, not so much.
All right. So we're going to take a short break, talk about our sponsors, and then we're going to come back and find out why Jake is called the chairman on the internet.
Well, wait, I also want to find out, A, why he didn't get his $9,500 back, and did they get a good payday over all this? Because they certainly should have. But go ahead and do the commercials
good.
First.
Yeah, you got to get your payday in here.
Yeah.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. From now until December 30th, you can use accumulated points to get half off of almost everything, including hotel, restaurants, liquor store, spa, salon, and other things. Tomorrow, Wednesday, December 23rd, the Budweiser Clydesdale will be there if you want your picture of it, with whether you have a plastic donkey or not. If that's not enough, there'll be free Budweiser and hot chocolate and apple cider. That's enough to make everybody horse lovers, I think. At the Palms, the typical Friday night drawings. Next couple weeks will be Saturday night because Christmas and New Year's are on Fridays. Actually, in most seasons, Christmas and New Year's is on the same day.
Most years.
When I was born, the year I was born, Christmas and New Year was not on the same day. You can work that out if you like. But anyway, let's go on. You earned double drawing. The Palms. They're having the drawings on Saturdays. Now you earn double drawing tickets in the afternoons, Tuesday through Friday. And five times drawing tickets between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Saturdays. Play for prizes, PFP, for until January 1st, you get cash. And you can earn and redeem up to $190 per day. You keep the points. It's for video poker players. It's at a rate of 0.2%. VideoPoker.com, best place to play lots of games. You sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year. That allows you to get corrections on most games. The game of the week is Ultimate X. Ultimate X is a 10-coin per line game. 5 coin goes to the game, and 5 coins go to building the multiplier. Every winning combination you get gives you a multiplier for your next hand. If you get some kind of winning combination on that next hand in that exact location, it is multiplied. In most games, full house is the biggest multiplier. So a dealt full house followed by a dealt royal, it's only $450 million against it. Go for it. It's when I was playing that game regularly, I was just, oh, this might be my day. This might somehow one in $450 million. I wasn't able to fade quite that. All right, so let's get back to Jake and his donkey.
Right, so I was asking, how did you not get your $9,500 back, and what happened with the lawsuit? Because it's very difficult to sue an Indian casino.
Thank you for bringing it up. I see sometimes in the AP forums, you know, like, I sure hope that I get roughed up in one of these things because it's going to be a windfall, my favorite word, or, you know, like, I want to be a lawsuit AP. We just wrapped up this suit Friday, like, 5 days ago.
Oh, wow.
This happened in 2011, so over 4 years to put this whole thing to bed. Is it so? So at the time they stole everything that I had, and my phone, everything. I got my car keys back and my driver's license to go home. That's it. And they took everything I had, the donkey, the phone, the money, slot tickets, just everything. And they're like, "You're not getting it back. Bye." as I get, you know, walked out. And when we, you know, when we sued them, like that, I never got the money back.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, it's part of the other settlement money, but no, there was no specific. Like,
but the settlement you got was significantly greater than $9,500.
Depends on how you feel about significant. Which I get. So, just a couple things about like the windfall. Well, first of all, it's not the headline grabbing. There was the case was in three parts. The one we just settled, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say how much it was, and it was against tribal guys, so we'll just ignore that. But the other two were against the state. I have no problem saying it. We got $210,000 amongst the three of us. So it's 70 grand ahead. By the time you, 9,500 of it was my own money. We have to hire the lawyer. The lawyer gets fees. We had to do like a mediation. We had to do depositions and all these things in Arizona. That's not free either. We foot the bill. I think by the time it was done, by the time it was done, I walked away with something like $25,000 of net cash, and then you pay taxes on top of that. So the notion, and this was a clear-cut case. We actually got summary judgment against them. This was, not as a lawyer, but it's like their case was so much not a case that there was no reason to even present this to a jury. They were guilty. Like, they had no defense. So for a case that obvious, that's the kind of money you're talking about. That was over 3 years. Hours and hours of writing stuff down, going to depositions back and forth. And I guess, people think of it like free money. Oh, you go to the back room. There is damages. I mean, it's like I had nightmares after the fact. And when it's happening, not to be overly dramatic, but it does, like, I'm being marched into the back. These guys weren't like police high. We're with the police force. Jake, come with us. No, it was just guys grabbing your arm and dragging you through the casino. They didn't have uniforms. They didn't have badges. I have no idea who these guys are. And they're just taking you into the back of an Indian casino. Are they going to kick my ass? Are they going to kill me? I don't know. And at that point in time, you just do not know what's going to happen with these guys. Being dragged into a non-public place by armed assailants who are not identifying themselves is, a scary thing. And then after the fact... it's not just like, you go in and have a cup of coffee with them and leave and sue them for a six-figure payday. It's nothing like that at all. I know there was the case in Tunica where the guy got like 800 grand and, that was maybe the outlier. But otherwise, no, it's not a great windfall. It's not really a good thing. And then I was just asked the other day, was it worth it for the amount of money you got, for the amount of time it took? I don't know, like financially, maybe, maybe not. But I still think that APs have, if you want to use the word duty, to make these lawsuits, because it's never going to get better if you don't. You can't let them get away with it. You can't let them get away with it. Like, you need, even if I walked with 10 grand, I got my money back or less. I mean, I still would have done it. And I'd do it again because they need to pay. They need to know. And I have heard,
There's no way to change their behavior if nobody does it. And that's my big beef with these casinos that just... what they do now is they stiff people. They just refuse to pay. And, there's just you sue, you get the money back, but they don't get punished is the big problem with those suits.
Well, the remarkable part was they probably could have just – if they didn't backroom us and, the false imprisonment and all that, if I had just taken my slot tickets up and said, no, we're not paying you, get out. I probably – I had about 4,000 in slot tickets. The other 5,500, they literally took cash out of my pocket – put it into a bag and said, get out. It wasn't even getting stiff. They stole the money.
Wow.
But if they said, you're being trespassed, and said, okay, I'm going to cash out my ticket. No. Am I going to sue an Indian tribe casino for a $4,000 slot ticket? I mean, they probably would have got away with it, but fortunately their own stupidity prevented that. I just think you have the duty. I mean, I don't expect anybody to shell out at a huge loss. But if you have these cases on contingency or whatever, I do think you should file those suits just to make a change. They're not going to stop stiffing. They're not going to stop the false imprisonments and stuff. Although I have heard that casino and their relationship with the police has, quote unquote, changed dramatically. So even there, I think a lot of positive change. You're probably not going to get falsely imprisoned by real cops at Madrazal Casino. So, hey, step in the right direction.
So there were real police involved, not just tribal police.
Yeah, that's why it was three different pieces of the lawsuit: the state of Arizona, the Gila County, the state cops, the Gila County cops, and then the people who were involved with the tribe. And the tribal one took a lot longer because, of course, they tried to get it thrown out on sovereign immunity grounds, which failed. And that's probably why you should talk to Bob about it, because I feel like it's kind of a landmark case. We actually beat the Indian tribe on sovereign immunity in federal court at the Ninth Circuit. So and they didn't appeal to the Supreme Court. So we beat them at a really high level, and it's a tribal sovereignty case. So I think that's good. I think it has big implications, at least on the West. One of the crazy things, we beat them in the Ninth Circuit, but then you had that case at Foxwoods where they stole the player's front money and didn't get it back because whatever circuit that is ruled third in favor of whatever, the yeah. third rules in favor of the Indians. So like, if I'm in Iowa, I don't know if they have any examples, but if I'm somewhere that's not in one of those jurisdictions, like if I'm the player, I'm pointing at the Ninth Circuit's ruling, and if I'm the tribe, I'm pointing at the Third Circuit. Like, I don't know what's going on with this stuff, but it's fascinating.
All right. You have an internet presence, and how'd you take the name Chairman?
Yeah, okay, so I think a couple of people who don't enjoy my post feel like it's somehow arrogant, which I suppose it seems like it. It's far from it. I don't know where the name itself means. So I like the show Iron Chef. Only the Japan version, the United States version sucks. The Japanese version is great. And there's the main character is the chairman, and you know he does all the stuff. It's whatever. It's a funny show. And I had a group of a couple of friends I known since high school, and I was like teaching them to count cards and doing some AP stuff. And for whatever reason, they called me chairman. I don't know why. And I was just starting at BJ21 at that time, maybe a couple years in. And I had never. I was just lurking because I didn't feel like I had anything to contribute. And I wanted to write, and I was I need a handle. If I had known it was going to be 13 years on now, I might have put some more thought. I at least would have come up with something, a double entendre or something clever. So I was like, chairman, I don't know. I probably won't post here more than once a year. And then, it comes out as something I've posted on for all this time. And it's kind of a fluky name. But no, I don't run any corporations. I don't think I'm the CEO of the AP world or anything of the sort. Believe it or not, it's Iron Chef Japan. Oh, and on the BJ21 thread about it, my favorite response was, I thought it was because you've spent so much of your life sitting in a chair gambling that you're just the chairman. Probably how it worked out.
All right. Well, I just want to say we welcome your questions. Send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can post questions there. If you want the show delivered automatically every week, you can sign up to do that at iTunes or Stitcher or at my site, richardmunchka.com. Or to get archives of every episode, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
Very good. Thank you, Jake, the chairman with the donkey. Thank you, Richard. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.